unwarranted music opinion. Unwarranted music opinion. I don't care if you don't want to hear my opinion about your robot.
Oh, we still didn't peak, so that's good.
Welcome to Unwarranted Music Opinions, the podcast where three people who are into music force each other to listen to music that they may or may not actually enjoy several times intently, and we all gather once a week about to just see what we all thought. I'm Jacob Lindberg, and I'm here with Brian Courtney.
Hello.
And Chaz Jenkins.
What's up, everybody?
Mama gonna cry and speed their horse, so we all join a man in a hearse. Papa gonna die and steal their horse, so we all set fire to the woods.
Just a little background. Zeal and Ardor are a black metal group formed back in 2013, led by Manuel Gagneux, a Swiss-American, who allegedly started the band after receiving a 4chan message responding to his question, what type of music should I make? And the guy said, slave spirituals mixed with black metal. Here we are. They have two projects. This is their second. This is more of the debut album. The first two tracks serve as kind of tone setters for this album, in my opinion, Intro and Grave Digger's Chant, both of which are more of a slave spiritual than any metal elements are included at all, if there are any in this track. As we move to Servants, we get a little more elements of black metal. The lyrical content of this track is super interesting because it's a double entendre, and Gagneux mentions it's supposed to be this way. It's talking about the left hand up at the end of the day and servants, join us. It's kind of like a weird, either a slave rising up, slave uprising, or him. He kind of talked about how it's directed at middle class America, but didn't really delve into that. But I think anyone of us can, anyone can make that connection if you're keeping up with anything that's going on. Don't You Dare is like my favorite track on this whole album. It's so eerie, and I love the build-up and the vocals on this track.
That's the first, that's the first track we really get like pure black metal, like screamed vocals.
Right.
I will say that this album is pretty powerful, and I love the feel it gives me. Though I have to say, I love more, like, I wrote down a bluesy metal, I dig it. I really like when it gets more bluesy than it does black metal. Black metal's really been my thing, but upon listening to this, like, I was pleasantly surprised about what I listened to.
The black metal plays super well up on this track.
It does, though. I will admit.
But they're like, don't you dare look away, and then the screaming, like, sun never gonna come out, like, that blows my mind.
I love the harmonies of how what they do with use the slave hymns. This is very creative. Very creative album.
After that track, we move into Fire of Motion. It's like the opposite of a breather. It's just this just hellish onslaught.
That was one of my favorite tracks for sure.
It's one of the best
riffs. The energy is in the whole thing is just a tight and really well constructed track that I thought.
Speaking of like the way it's constructed, the album places its cooldowns pretty well, I think, up until the end. Where
I like the instrumental breaks.
Right.
I didn't like the instrumental breaks.
I thought that they were
simple.
Pretty too simple, too boring.
One of them sound just like a Deadmau5 track, which I thought was kind of funny. Solve. Solve sounded exactly like a Deadmau5 track.
Solve into Coagulas. It's a dub. I feel.
But you didn't like the Hermit? What a beautiful song.
No, I didn't like
the
Hermit. I thought it was just okay.
I really love that.
I thought that all the instrumentals did was make the album.
We'll get in this with the other albums. I don't really have a least favorite track on this. This was just a good listen all the way. One moment in the sound where I was like.
I had trouble picking the least favorite on this album. If I absolutely had to pick, maybe like, I don't know.
Solve.
Like, it'd have to be a cooldown, you know what I mean? If I were picking one of the songs that were like my least favorite, maybe Row Row.
Maybe they shouldn't have.
Row Row's kind of rubs me the wrong way at the beginning with the kind of. It's a little too catchy, poppy, I guess.
Yeah,
If I had to pick one, Row Row.
Just the way it starts is
the problem. I guess my biggest problem with this album is that it. I guess if you're going to use hymns, it's kind of the point. It's a little repetitive. Like,
I never bothered me, but I understand what you mean. The lyrics
songs are short enough that I think that isn't too much of
an issue. That's true, but just...
There's nothing on here over 3 minutes.
Hearing the dude yell the same thing. No, one of them... There's one song Coagula?
Yeah.
He's literally saying the same thing for like 3 minutes.
But it's just a cool, it's just a devil chant, just, you know, Salve Coagula.
Well, again, it didn't bother me.
I love when you look into that. I love
that's
that.
It. There's nothing really, it's a pretty solid album. I enjoy it.
I love the ties to, you know, some like dark art, like Satanism on this album. Salve Coagula being like a cool moment for that. Even though I don't like the tracks right next to each other musically, I do think they are nice fitting, because Baphomet has the Salve and Coagula tied to his forearms for, it's like with Satanism and alchemy being tied together. I thought that was pretty cool. But it's a pretty surface level reference at the end of the day.
You know what's really funny? This band, as far as I can tell from this album, this album is what Imagine Dragons wishes they were. This powerful, bluesy sound with epic choruses.
Imagine Dragons, really?
Like, really?
But like, well, no, like, when you hear Imagine Dragons try to do like an epic chorus, it sounds weak as hell. But then this album comes in, it's like, like, and it,
another favorite last favorite track on here. I think the closer is a really fitting closer.
My favorite track by far.
Stranger
track.
Fruit. Very like, and also We Can't Be Found.
I really like the piano on Stranger Fruit.
Super unnerving track. We Can't Be Found, funnily enough, is akin to Makeshift Swahili on Deceit, when we talk about that album, where it's multiple cuts of the song. This is actually multiple just sessions kind of cobbled together.
That's cool.
To Gagnon.
I like that line.
It turned out great.
I like that line, Stranger Fruit got holes in flesh, but ain't gonna spoil because it never was fresh. That's a pretty solid line.
It's a really good take on, you know, the concept of Stranger Fruit and the, you know, which, you know, if you don't know what the context of that is, you should absolutely go read the poem. I believe it's just titled Strange Fruit. You'll immediately find what I'm talking about.
The production
about
on this album is really good too. I feel the forcedness and this
really not a weak moment instrumentally.
The energy is 110% through the whole thing. Even the slowdowns. I know you don't like the slowdowns, but I love it. I just like how it takes a break, but it's still so beautiful. I don't know.
The mixing on Waste was one of my favorite moments. The guitars just...
Yes,
they're just,
yes.
It feels like I'm being run through a portal, and each ring to a new realm are these guitars blasting.
I never thought I would love a black metal album.
The moments,
history's been made today.
The moments where the Slave Spiritual style vocals and the black metal riffing are melded together, like, the most cohesively, are, I think, my favorite moments on the album. The moments where you kind of get one or the other.
Yeah, there's a few tracks where it's
like
more black metal.
Actually,
like Gravedigger's Chant,
even. Jack would probably like Gravedigger's Chant. I know they're trying to introduce
the
Slave. It's okay. I mean,
to me, it just doesn't...
See, I think
I think it's
more bluesy than... I will agree.
I felt like both the aspects of...
Like, when I listened to it, I was like, have I heard this somewhere before?
Both the aspects of... The bluesiness, the Slave Spirituals, the gospel influence, and the black metal stuff, I feel like I've heard the riffs, the melodies. I feel like the songwriting isn't this album's strongest point.
Yeah.
I think the strongest point for me was the unique and sort of interesting creative take on these two styles, blending them together.
It's innovative.
If this has been done before, these guys did it better.
It hasn't been done before. I know that Algiers, which is a band I enjoyed more than this, they mix gospel with post-punk and like industrial, which is a really, really cool.
Gotta say, I do agree the innovation on this album comes from the blending of the two styles and not what they're doing to either of them respectively. Another shout out to the samples on here. The sample on Servants is amazing. It fits so well. It's one of the former priests at the Church of Satanism. I love that sample so much. Mm-hmm. It adds so much to that track. And the sample, it might be on Don't You Dare. It's kind of incomprehensible what they're saying, but it's just another, like, you know, general Satanist priest chanting. But I don't know. The one on Sermons adds so much.
You know.
Just your typical Satanist priest.
It's cool. It's like 1930s radio. I adore that sample. Every time. It like, gives the track a second wind it didn't even need. Like, it just enhances that track so much.
I will say, and this doesn't happen too much for me. My first listen to this, I was kind of like, eh. And then my second listen, I was like, huh.
If you're not into black metal, then this
I'm
is going to
really
be
not.
This
so,
is going to be some new.
Which is why I liked it when this, which I would disappointed me a little how some songs relied more on the black metal side than the bluesy gospel side. I really wish there was more, at least more of an even split in each track.
I think you get the perfect combo on Don't You Dare. I think it's...
I think the perfect combo is in the last track.
Belt on Ashes?
That is my favorite song of the album. Great song.
I think it's a good closer. I think as its own track, it doesn't stand out that much.
Yeah, I didn't... Honestly, and to point out another criticism I have that you know, overall I enjoyed this album, but there were definitely some things holding me back from saying it's like a great album. Mm. The vocals I thought were kind of generic throughout. I didn't feel like the vocalist...
The dude's into it, though.
I know he's into it. I just wish that there was something else, just some more...
That's what I'm saying. When you're going with hymns, you're going to be repeating yourself a lot.
I know, but...
And it goes on
a
lot.
But pointing into Algiers, there's similar vocal melodies, and I think the vocals that band does are very exciting and are unique and have a lot of personality. We're here... Not on every track, but on some of the tracks, and Built on Ashes is one of them, it just seems a little generic vocally.
Row Row was a moment.
Maybe that's why I kind of...
Yeah, I agree. Row Row was another
one. I hate that track. There's not a single track on here I really hate, or there's not a single track on here I'm not going to skip.
There was never a track.
That I am going to skip.
And overall, I just thought it was too long at 47 minutes. I felt like this was an album where...
You'd probably take
by
the instrumental
third,
parts.
Yeah, by the last third of the album, I was thinking... I know what you're doing now. And I felt like all of the musical ground that had already been trodden on before that was just being done to a lesser degree of quality on the last like third of the album. I felt like he was kind of repeating himself.
That's this album's biggest flaw, is repetition.
Yeah, if it was like 35 minutes, maybe a little over 30 minutes long, you know, an assault
gets in,
of sound,
gets out, gets in,
then
gets
I probably
out.
Would like it more, honestly, but I feel like it just goes on and it overstays its welcome just a little bit.
I personally like the cooldowns. I think they add a little flow to the album that kind of keeps me wanting to
me
hear
it. Me too.
They
were a pleasant surprise. I love The Hermit. What a beautiful track.
I didn't think it... None of these,
so beautifully... It's just... Nah. I was like,
none
yeah.
of these blew me away. They feel like just, you know, for me, they feel like...
And I'm telling you, Solve sounds just like Deadmau5. If you don't know what Deadmau5's typical sound is, then I'm probably...
All I just wrote for Solve was kind of pointless.
I think the last... Those two, Solve and Coagula being next to each other, while cool thematically, does kind of hurt the tail end of the album. I think this album has a much stronger front half, but I don't think the back end is weighing it down or anything. Overall, I like this album a lot. I have a lot of favorites on here that I'll go back to for a long time. Well, and I'm curious to check out the group's older work and I'm excited for what they're going to do going forward.
Oh, yeah. What's...
If they build upon this sound and clean it up, they're going to have some good...
Previous album is this sound as well. So we'll see, you know, I'm excited to see what they do going forward, because I think even if they made another album like this, I wouldn't be disappointed. I'm feeling...
They got a good formula here, they just need to refine it, and then they'll have...
Now I can see, you know, to be cynical for a moment,
right?
I could see the more generic aspects of this band taking over. I could like, what if he just can't figure out where to go from here and just keeps making
like stuff like this.
I feel like this could get stale really quickly if he doesn't spice it up a little bit.
Right. And if they, you know, I don't want them... I'd hate to see them blow up their discography, you know, and I would hate to look back on tracks like Don't You Dare or Servants, you know, and think, what could have been, or like, this
absolutely
needs to be good. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
I don't want it to become derivative of itself.
He's got something good here, but he needs to...
Be careful. And I think this could produce a lot of...
I'd give this album a 7 out of 10. Pleasant surprise. And I might actually listen to it again sometime. I never thought I'd say that about a black metal album, but here we are.
If you haven't gotten into black metal, I mean, it's obviously an extremely...
It's not for everyone.
It's an abrasive. It's not accessible. But if you are into lo-fi, kind of do-it-yourself kind of music, it's kind of the metal equivalent of that. Mm.
Well, the gospelness really helps.
There's not much more intense than black metal out there.
For real.
Artists like Death Grips are hugely inspired by black metal artists. Just for
sheer,
yeah.
I couldn't guess.
I'm feeling an 8 on this album. I love this thing. I think I like low-key love it. Every time I listen to it, I enjoy it more. I enjoy listening to it more than talking about it, because some of the scum kind of rises to the surface. But there are a lot of favorites on here that I'll...
It's a good listen.
It's one of the better releases I've heard this year out of most of the albums.
It's hard to find an album where you don't want to... Where there is at least one track where there's at least one track where, oh, I got to skip that.
I disagree. I never skip tracks.
Even if it's the worst thing you've heard?
Very, very rarely do I skip a track.
I only skip tracks if I know I'm only going to hear the album once and I'm just listening out of morbid curiosity. And I'm like, nope, skip, waste of time. Or if I'm like, or if I've heard it a few times before and I can't, like the first, there was on the New Death Grips record on You're the Snitch, Little Richard, can't stand it. One of the worst tracks, skip it every time.
So what about you, Jacob?
I'm going to go with the 6. I thought this album was good. I enjoyed
6, 7, 8.
It stands out from the crowd. It's doing something interesting. It has some pretty major flaws, in my opinion, but there's a lot of potential here, and
absolutely,
I pretty much enjoyed, you know, there wasn't a moment where I thought, oh man, I wish this album was over. You know, I definitely enjoyed it all the way through. So
I'd say keep up the good work.
It was a good album for sure.
When I woke up this morning, things were looking bad. Seemed like total silence was the only friend I had. A bowl of oatmeal tried to stare me down and won. And it was 12 o'clock before I realized I was having no fun. Ah, but fortunately...
Now we're going to discuss an album that I know very well. It's the debut release by singer-songwriter John Prine, who is a pretty big staple in the folk and country music scene. Still going today, had an album released this year. He's been cited as an influence and a favorite by musicians from pretty much all across the spectrum of different styles, not only albums that make music in Prine's wheelhouse, but also artists like David Gilmour of Pink Floyd. Spiritualized have an ode to John Prine lyrically in one of their albums. So his reach and his status in the music industry has been long cemented as kind of a musician's musician. I won't be able to not say it right away. This album in particular is one of my favorite albums of all time. I remember listening to it while building the house that that my family lives in, and like using the nail thing that you like to step on really hard to like put hardwood floor in. This album was playing like over and over in the background on crappy radios. This album has some personal significance to me. It's definitely one of my favorites, but I'll just, I'm just gonna let you all get into it first, because I'll have quite a bit to say about it.
Bravo. Damn good album. Holy crap. Where do I start? This is as good as it gets when it comes to country music. Like, all the instruments coming in when they need to, doing their part, it all blending together in this beautiful, feel-good music. You ever play, if you play Fall into Vegas and you just walk in the desert with some great country music in the back, like this is that album. It's so beautiful. So beautiful. Each tune just had me like either go, aww, or maybe go, just but very cynical too.
Oh yeah.
John Prine is one sarcastic bastard.
Oh yeah.
Good lord.
I actually think more of these tracks are actually pretty heart-wrenching than compared
to like, or they're sarcastic, funny, and heart-wrenching all at the same time, because that is what makes John Prine
this guy
a masterpiece song.
Gives Bob Dylan a run for his money as
honestly, he does.
He's better.
No, I mean, there are different styles, obviously. Dylan is a lot more poetic. Dylan is a lot more literary and a lot more wordy.
No, I mean as a vocalist. Like, John...
Sure,
as a singer, John Prine's way better.
I do want to talk about my one criticism of this album. I really only have one thing that bothers me about this album. It's the mixing. I don't like when percussion's in one ear and I'm getting guitar in another. That really bothered me about this album. I just a personal thing. Like, I couldn't, like, when I, because I'm listening to a song I'm really enjoying, but sometimes that would pull me out of the experience for just a second, because I think his lyrical content, I think his songwriting is so strong, it's really hard to...
I think my biggest problem is some of the songs, and this isn't really a deal-breaker for me, some of the songs went on a little too long. But very few and far between, just a little bit.
They breezed by for me.
Again, very minor. That's just a nitpick at best.
This is a
damn good album.
If I had a criticism, I would say that the latter half isn't quite as strong as the first half. But
I agree.
It doesn't really take away from the whole album listening experience for me. I'm never wanting to stop the album once it gets to the last few songs.
That's surprising.
I always want to listen to it all the way.
Also, I love the back half of this thing.
Lyrically, content-wise, this sums up the 70s perfectly. Like, if you want to know what the 70s was like, just listen to this album.
I think
he hits all the marks. Vietnam, religion, War in general, like loneliness, just everything.
Drug politics.
He hits all the
living
marks.
I mean, just finding a way to enjoy living.
The lines on Paradise about the coal mine.
That hit close to home for probably all of us, because we all live in Kentucky.
Nah. But
well, you're from Louisville, so.
No, I'm not. I'm from Lawrenceburg. I'm from small towns. I just don't care for them. I like the way that he writes songs. I think it's a pretty brick and mortar structure for most of these, but it's more in the verse to verse and what he's saying. Every word really feels like it counts.
He's speaking from experience.
Illegal Smile is a great open to this album.
Oh, yeah.
Kind of misleading. Because it's very uplifting, very joyful. I love that this isn't a dope song. This is not a song about marijuana.
Yeah, but you think it is.
On the surface it is, yeah.
It's incredible. Because when I read it wasn't, I was like, is he sure? Like, it's awesome. I love what he said about it. He was like, dope, you know, dope smokers loved it so much, I just didn't want to say anything about it. That's my favorite. Spanish Pipe Dream is a pretty... It's an okay moment for me. I do like it. I love the sentiment of the track itself.
I mean, all the melodies.
I think it's a great
melody.
Talking about musically arranged, everything's fine. The mixing's the only part that bothers me. No one's playing bad.
Let's get into the most heart-wrenching song, Hello In There.
No.
Good God.
Maybe the most heart-wrenching song.
That's the second most heart-wrenching song.
What's most heart-wrenching for you?
Sam Stone.
Okay, here's the thing. Yeah, but Hello In There speaks close home for me.
Sam Stone is absolutely hands down one of the saddest songs ever written.
I think it is the most.
If you want to like
some of the lyrics on that, I mean, obviously everyone knows the line. The whole the money that daddy makes goes in a hole in his arm.
Yeah,
Jesus
Christ died for nothing. Like,
that's a very great line
to say that in 1971. Like,
yeah.
He would be
on a country album.
I mean, the same with his environmental concerns on Paradise.
I'm gonna rant just a little bit.
Go ahead.
About the misconceptions people have about country music who don't listen to country music. People say, oh, I really don't like country music because sometimes they assume that everyone who writes country music is conservative or is backwards in some way.
Not John Prine. He's pretty...
No, and not a lot of the outlaw country and not a lot of the folk country artists. And there are several underground country artists right now who are tackling some of the same topics that Prine wants. Country's not necessarily a genre that is not progressive.
Prine
absolutely shows it here. I think that kind of upsets me sometimes because you can't assume that everyone from a certain place believes a certain thing.
Right.
And that goes for the South, too. And that goes for artists in the South. And that goes for artists who are making music that sounds like this and country music. Prine, on this album, tackles drug addiction. He tackles Vietnam. He tackles environmental issues with Paradise.
Religion.
And the most political song on here, which is... hilarious and dark. It's Your Flag to Cowboys.
Yes, my favorite song by far. What a big middle finger to just
literally. It's a song where a man purchases a bunch of American flag stickers, puts them on his car, crashes into a tree and dies, and is confused. Why am I not getting into heaven? I'm so patriotic because I bought all these flag stickers.
It's a great satire.
I just love that, you ain't getting here because look at all the people in here because you're stupid-ass war. It's like, damn. Say that back then.
It's relevant today. Like, everything that he's talking about here is still very relevant today.
I actually like some of the more relationship-based tracks. The chunk of the album where we're going from Far From Me to into Angel of Montgomery.
Yeah, another phenomenal
Angel
song.
From Montgomery. And Donald and Lydia is a moment that grew on me more.
Nice.
It actually grew into one of my favorites.
It was
my least favorite initially, but it grew into one of my favorites. I think I love the line about how he's talking about he's, you know, in the latrine at boot camp, presumably,
mm-hmm.
and he's thinking about her. He's talking about jerking off, boys. It's a great moment because you don't catch it because the song is so sweet up to that point. I mean, and it's kind of hilarious too because at the beginning of the song he calls Lydia fat. I love the line that says her eyes are sinking into her fat face.
It feels so sincere. This is sincere.
It's
such a sincere
album. He's very visceral.
If I could mention an album that's like actually speaking from the heart, it's this album.
Absolutely.
Like, I've never experienced such a I'm speaking the truth.
It's very earnest.
Yeah, incredibly.
But I think the weakest moment on here for me is actually probably Quiet Man. I think Quiet Man's an okay track. It doesn't really do a whole lot in the context of the album. And then, like, 6 O'Clock News feels like almost like an afterthought as Flash Black Blues.
Yeah.
But I don't think... But here's the thing.
It picks right back up with the ending track, though, which is...
This is, like, the most minor complaint because... It's barely a complaint because, I mean, all the songs are still very good. Even though I'm not totally...
Again, like Brian's album, there's not a single part in this album where I'm like, eh.
And, like, yeah, I agree that, you know, the back half of the album, the last four tracks, probably aren't my favorite.
I think that's where I got the feeling of, like, we're still going. Flashback
This album
Blues
is greater than the sum of its parts.
Yeah. Flashback Blues, what an ending.
I think it's a cute little ending.
It's so catchy.
It blew me away at first, and then afterwards I was like, this is kind of a catchy closer. It's you know, it's meant to open and close with a smile, because everything in between is really rough stuff.
This album, if I could describe this album, you say a joke to your like grandpa, and he like half smiles. That's how I would describe the sound. That feeling you get when you make your grandpa laugh.
Oh man, that line on oh god, Far From Me is one of the saddest tracks on here, in my opinion. It's that or Angel from Montgomery. Angel from Montgomery.
Hello in there's got to be it for me.
Far From Me hits home. I take it kind of personally when he's talking about how he's whistling the song from the radio, and then she's like, "I hate this song," but it's not because it's the song playing; it's because he's whistling. That's harsh. Heart's
pretty good. Not bad. Can't complain. Actually, everything is just about the
same.
I
can't figure out. That's like the weirdest track on the album. That is easily so weird to me. I don't know what he's talking about. I kind of get what he's saying.
I think he's trying to say, like, oh, here we go.
Just kind of the futility of life, so you might as well just do what you want. Which he talks about on Spanish Pipe Dream a little bit. Kind of daydreaming about, you know, just throwing all of life's concerns away and just moving to the country.
That's the thing that drew me into the track Donald and Lydia, and eventually turned it into one of my favorites. I mean, Angel from Montgomery, it's so sad.
It's
this
phenomenal.
Hollow woman, you know, living in this home.
Get over
how can you go to work?
Music is. There's one song.
The chord progressions are.
There's one song.
Everlasting.
I can't remember what it is.
It's
but like the organ comes in, and
It's probably Angel from Montgomery.
Oh, just there are moments where like electric guitar solo just comes in. Each instrument just opens up, does its thing, and goes right back out and lets John Prine continue his thing. It's beautifully composed. This is a good... Whoever these guys are that are John Prine's backup band, he got all he can for that buck he paid for them, because they are damn good.
I just love how on the same album, you start with Illegal Smile... You go into Spanish Pipe Dream, two of the most upbeat, two of the most happy songs on the album.
Two of the saddest songs
To Hello in There, which is a song about getting old, or in it's a song about just oldness
in general.
Staring
through the back screen door, like very, he makes every... Like,
John Prine was 25 when he wrote this album.
Every line of every song it counts. Well, I think it's just a sharp observation, because these are a lot of things.
Again, it's one of those projects that you're like, some guy just came up with this.
This is the product of observation and its ambition. Because you can see all these things. These are all things we could easily observe. But he is such a good songwriter, and he's so compelled by the things he's seeing.
He makes every line, every lyric.
You have to read
matters.
Every line. You're gonna miss
like
something.
On Sam Stone. So I've loved this song. This has been my favorite John Prine
this
song
is probably
for a long time.
Sam Stone might be the best.
It's
track
the
on the album,
saddest song.
It's definitely the best written.
But there was a line on this album that I didn't quite understand for the longest time. The little pitchers have big ears. I didn't know how that went along with the whole story of the drug-addicted father who overdoses on heroin. And then I realized little pitchers. So I looked at the picture of a pitcher, and it's got kind of the handle that looks like an ear. Mm-hmm. And then I thought, his children are noticing his descent into overdosing. That's what that line means. And his playful pitchers have big ears. He's saying... His kids are not oblivious.
Yeah.
His kids are noticing their father dying.
They're more aware of this than he is.
Yes.
It's pretty.
And that just gave me like this whole, like, I've loved this song for years, and I didn't realize what that meant until this week.
That's such like a local saying, too. He's very tied into, you know, where he's from. Like a song like Paradise shows, you know, he really has a lot of passion for the place he came from. And I think that shows through in the
To, like, live in a state like Kentucky and close to West Virginia, this album is very potent in that sense. I'm sure if you were to show this album to someone who lives in, like, California, it may not have
hit. There's some environmental stuff going on in California, too.
Well, of course. I mean, like, not
coal
this,
mining specifically.
In the Commonwealth area,
yeah.
This album is, like, in the heart of it, you know. Yeah, what
I
mean?
Actually, Prime didn't come from Kentucky. His father was born in Kentucky, and
he makes a reference on the coal mine song.
Yeah,
out West
so
Kentucky,
that's he would visit with his father a bit, but he came to prominence in the music scene in Chicago.
Jacob, I got to ask you a question because this is like one of your albums.
This is like a top 50 of all time.
So like, what the hell is he talking about at the end of A Legal Smile, where he goes, "Hot dog bun, my sister's
oh my
a nun."
God.
What does that mean?
What an enjoyable moment. It's just like a tongue in cheek.
Yeah.
That honestly was one of the things that made
what
me.
What an ending to a song.
Like the first time I heard it, I really thought it was gonna
yeah, be. I was like, what?
Just so playful, huh?
Yeah. Did he say that?
I love the transfer into the chorus on that song too, as it
like, changes every, time signatures.
Yes,
totally.
Exactly.
Yeah.
If I had to guess,
that song is deceptively difficult to play because you gotta go from a standard 4/4 into like a waltz time signature.
Right. It's a very
yeah. If I had to guess, like, why he says that at the end, he's in the studio recording it, and the guy comes in and is like, we need, like, 5 more seconds. So he's like, hot dog bun, my sister's a nut.
I think he just did
it.
I think he just did it because
the whole track
to.
Is super upbeat. And
yeah.
It is. It goes with what it's talking about.
I like the way
it was a weird, like, for the first track, a weird curve at the end. I was like, what?
I like the way he talks about what that track is about. He's like, things that make me smile that other people don't. That's really relatable for someone like me. I just wandered around as a kid, so that was really cool. I think my last thing I want to say about this is there's actually a moment on here. It's on Sam Stone. There are like some guitars that sound psychedelic at one point in this track.
This is 1971, so the psychedelia,
it's
just
a very
the palette,
small influence.
The sound palette of psychedelia had permeated every single recording studio in the entire world in 1971.
It happens on this one track. It's a weird moment. I still love that song. My favorites on this thing are Illegal Smile, Sam Stone, Paradise, retrospectively.
Flag Decal.
Your flag, obviously. Your flag decal won't get you into heaven anymore. Far From Me, Angel from Montgomery, and Donald and Lydia. My only complaint about this album that I could really think is maybe the mixing bothers me on some tracks, but it's only for it's
do you
for,
do you experience
for,
that because I didn't get that
I didn't have an issue really. I mean it's
the 70s, like
it's kind of a dated production technique, but to me it just I don't know
just
I've
the
never,
way each instrument comes in with their little thing.
I've never
really
enjoyed
me.
That production technique, but it really only it's a fraction, it's less than 10% of the album that I'm
it's
really
a nitpick
by.
Like again, my nitpick
the
is
last,
that
the assembly just, of the last few tracks, I feel like 6 o'clock news kind of gets lost in the shuffle, even though it's one of the more dark moments on with the suicide of the boy and how this song personally relates to Prime. But those are very minor complaints in the face of an album that is composed beautifully musically. The songwriting is on point. And the lyrics are very vivid, and each line counts. I'm going like a 9 on this thing. 9 out of 10.
8 out of 10. Country done right. If you hate country, listen to this album, and you will change your mind.
I agree. I think this is definitely an album for people who say they don't like country, but don't really know about country other than what's
or
on
the very
top
least,
40 radio.
At the very least, if you are all about lyrics, then and you haven't heard this album yet, you're sleeping.
If you're a Dylan fan, check this album out for sure.
Dylan likes this guy. Dylan played backup harmonica for this guy on the song, I believe. Can't remember what song, but he played backup harmonica for him as Dylan had an early copy of the record.
Good pick, Jacob. Good pick.
This absolutely is a personal 10 out of 10 for me. I think it's probably one of the most underrated singer-songwriter albums ever recorded. I don't see it talked about too much when people are talking about, like, best of all time. It definitely is respected. It's respected by a lot of artists. I just think that more people need to hear this album. That's part of the reason why I chose it. I just think that
listen to this album.
More people need to hear this, and then once you've listened to this, you need to go and you need to listen to 70s outlaw country.
It's like when I listened to this album first, I was like, I just need to get in a big truck and drive down the road and just.
It's
like,
a great driving album.
It makes me want to listen to more country.
It makes me want to play Fall New Vegas. If I'm being honest,
I'm gonna go back
like next a, from here. Okay, Redheaded Stranger by Willie Nelson. It's like 30-ish minutes long, mostly acoustic. It's very storytelling oriented.
Okay.
And it all works as almost like a, like you have reprises, like multiple reprises of the same song. It's very conceptual.
Okay.
And lyrically fantastic also. I think that's the next step in your all's country journey.
Okay.
Great job, Jacob. Great job.
Yeah, I knew I would love this record.
Just one birthday card sent to me. I miss my own surprise party. It's me, I'm only 21 years old, and now I'm drinking alone. I use my phone.
I picked the debut album by I guess you consider them pop punk. I consider them a little bit more.
Like power pop is a good way to describe it.
The duo Diet Sig, two really good friends who just met up and have just been jamming along. They had an EP, I think in 2015, and this is their debut. This is me. This is like my kind of music. Just fun, upbeat, catchy, very energetic music that's only done with... Oh, no, you guys are good. If you want a description of what I'm seeing a devilish smile on Jacob's face and Brian hiding his face. I think I know what it's about to come, but I don't care what you guys think. I love this album. I love this album so much.
Yeah, you should keep loving this album.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, if you like this album, you should like it. Don't let anyone...
All right, guys, what did you not like?
I hated this album.
Why?
I hated this album. I disliked this album more than I disliked the Nicki Minaj album we talked about two weeks ago.
But why, though?
Let it all out.
I absolutely hated this album.
But like, why? Okay. Why? You can't just say that and I'll back it up.
Let's start with things I like about this album, though. Let's start with the positives.
Okay, quicker.
Because there are some. There are some positives. I gotta compose myself here, man.
The tables have turned.
This album...
How many times did you listen to this?
I listened to it 3 times.
That's a long 28 minutes, dude.
Yeah.
I don't want to say anything else yet, because I don't hear what you have to say, but it's a long 28 minutes.
Okay. Let me just compose myself here. All right.
I'm tearing up.
So,
fresh orange here.
The production, it's punchy. The drums are punchy. You feel like you're sitting there with them. The drums are raw. They really feel good. The guitar has a nice amount of crunch. It got a nice amount of noise on it. Overall, the whole production aspect of this album, it really feels like it's an early 90s kind of power pop, kind of punky record. It really sounds like you could take it straight out of the early 90s, and the production definitely suits that. I think that the songs here, from a songwriting perspective, are decent most of the time. The album as a whole, it feels like it's been competently put together. It doesn't feel like it's about to fall apart. It doesn't feel, you know, really even rushed from a songwriting perspective. However, the lyrics...
It's been very cordial.
And the vocals just absolutely...
What are you talking about?
Horrible.
Oh my god.
Terrible.
She is letting it all out there.
No.
Some personal stuff.
No.
What do you mean?
Okay, so let's preface this again. I like music like this. I like music that sounds like this. There are plenty of albums that I enjoy that have a similar sound and a similar lyrical themes. This album thinks it's so cool. This album takes itself so seriously, and that's what I can't get into when it comes to this genre. If you're gonna make upbeat, kind of just fun music, you have to at least have a little bit of not caring in you. You have to have a little bit a willingness to make things not sound totally perfect.
But see, I disagree. I think that's exactly what they're doing. This is above a lot of more crappy pop punk bands out there. They do the same old schlock.
I think it's right in there with the mix. I think this album does think it's very cool and takes itself too seriously. The moments on here where it feels like it's not taking itself seriously, or maybe I'm just imagining it, I really wanted to like this album. Because I think, apart from Jake, I kind of mirror Jacob, or like reverse a little bit, I guess. The production, whatever, this has been done so many times, it's whatever, like it doesn't stand out. I think the vocals stand out to me a little bit.
She's going for it. No, they're not that good.
I just like the more forlorn moments, even though they feel, I don't know, sometimes they feel fake, but I want to
like them. It just feels fake. That's what I was getting from the whole thing. There were moments on this album, and this, I could be totally wrong, but there were moments on this album like, Are You Ready? Or the, and from the first track, or there's a moment on here on one of the tracks where, you know, before the guitar comes in, you hear this distortion, like this feedback. And I just thought, right when that happened, there is no way that actually happened. Definitely had a producer who was like, let's make this thing seem cool and accessible and hip and put a little bit of feedback in there so it sounds DIY when really it's just been made in this studio. And it just did not feel authentic to me whatsoever. Now, I understand that maybe her lyrics, I don't doubt that what she's saying is coming from her own experiences.
Can I give you a touch of perspective from this?
Sure.
This to me feels like a young, uproarious girl. She's 21 years old, freshly 21 as of the year of this album's release, as far as I can tell. So she's very, I admire how brash, and I admire how, I do admire
how... You guys
how,
need to watch these two play live. They go at it.
It would be a fun, I'm sure the live show would be fun.
It would be fun live, yeah. I mean, there's a band we might review in the future that
so
might have been
catchy.
Better live.
It's so catchy.
No,
I
oh
didn't
my
think,
goodness.
I thought the songs weren't that good.
There are a couple of memorable lines on this thing. My two favorite songs, and the only songs I'd wager to call favorites, I might never ever hear them again, are Bath Bomb and Apricots. They're very short.
Oh, Apricots is my least favorite
song. Least favorite? I thought...
Why?
Because
it's so soft.
Apricots, it's just... It does nothing. And like, it has
you
a lyrical...
You missed the point!
No, no.
Ah.
It has a lyrical concept that I can get behind, the whole buying too much food, but you're alone and lonely, so you don't eat all of it, so it goes bad. Like, sure, okay. Intriguing lyrical concept. The delivery. Like, it maybe she can sing, but the vocal style she's going for, the way that she says tacos on the song...
Road trip.
On the road trip song, she goes, tacos, like, it's so, it's just this.
Too quirky.
It's trying so hard to be quirky.
I want to say, I hate the beginning of this album.
Yeah.
16 and...
What?
Bite Back is the worst track.
What?
It's forgettable.
But sick, oh my
16,
god, what's she singing
okay,
about?
Let me,
like,
Chaz, let me level with you. 16 is, like, the most fake deep I've ever heard.
Yeah.
Like, it is so absolutely... There, the moment where she says, like, moaning her own name is weird, I wish they delved into more comedy, because those are the more appealing moments on the album. And the moments like Bath Bomb and Apricots are only
like,
so appealing is because I think they're so emo.
Would
they're
meet
funny.
Me at a party and forget my name and try to take me home all the same? Like, come on now.
How
no.
is the most general, like... How
it's
is the most
such,
unique
yeah.
sounding vocal and band going to call someone out for being generic? Or
and,
like,
and again,
someone?
Here's an issue I have is she talks about, like, she calls out so many people. Like, she calls out, like, relationship issues, and she's like, you kind of suck. Like, are there some lyrical themes that revolve around telling other people they kind of suck? And then there's a song here, which, honestly, musically is my favorite song, Made of the Mist, where basically she's
yeah.
saying, if you think I suck, screw you. This doesn't
this
match
album
up.
Is very childish, but for
not
me...
Not in a good way.
But for me... And sometimes it's a good way for me. On Apricots in particular, where I think it's like a very... I mean, it's such an... It's kind of overblown emo. It's like almost parody of itself, which emo has been. But, like, I do enjoy that line about the four apricots. I do enjoy Bath Bomb just for sheerly... I think Bath Bomb is the most genuine track on here because I can picture this girl just, like, sitting in the bathtub like with the Bath Bomb, like, forlorning her troubles because she's, you know... She's kind of full of herself. We're about the same age as her, for reference. I don't really even hate this album, honestly. I really wanted to like this album.
I ended up hating it because it just felt like it was a bad parody of some music that I love sonically. And here's a recommendation for you, Jazz. I'm going to tell you an album that you probably will love. If you love this album, here is an album that you will love. 1993, self-titled debut by the band Tiger Trap. Sonically, like, the drums sound really similarly produced, the guitars are similarly produced. It is catchy, it's fun, it doesn't take itself too seriously, there's a lot of the lyrical themes are the same. To me, this is like the worst possible version of Tiger Trap. But, if you like this, you probably will also like Tiger Trap. I'm just saying.
This album has...
You guys
like,
disappoint me.
The forlorn moments on this album don't feel earned. Like, Blob Zombie is a song of... this song is so contradictory. Basically describes why this album sucks.
I hated the shouted background vocals. There's so many cliche indie tropes.
Yes.
Like like choruses and the shouted background vocals.
That was the worst stuff for me. I could not stand stuff like
yeah.
that. I had to really
I
listen
love
to that
stuff like that.
No, it's cliche and it's boring.
Like,
and,
it's played out, man. I don't know. It's just not interesting. A Blob Zombie where she's talking about I want to be the best at this, but I can't get out of bed. We very much hear that here.
It just feels like, I don't know.
Like I said,
I guess part of the reason why I really like the songwriting isn't horrible.
Yeah,
most of the time. I think part of the reason why I am really disliking this is because I
that last track feels like such half an idea.
Oh yeah,
not to interrupt you.
Oh
just,
come
it's
on,
hard to talk about where
you
guys.
I wrote down.
You guys are lying to me.
There's
no way.
It's not anything about the punk scene. It's about the minority being the loudest vocal portion. So
mm-hmm.
it's not hard to be punk while wearing a skirt.
Also, when she said that line, it's a valid line. She has a right to feel that way. She's correct in that, you know, she should be proud of who she is and, like, say screw you if you don't let her speak and everything.
Right.
The hard to be a punk without wearing a skirt, it's said with such this, like, it's a novel idea. When Beat Happening came out in 1985 and wore cardigans and skirts and played punk music, when Sleater-Kinney and the whole Riot Girl movement happened in the 90s, like, did that never happen? Like, it's not a new idea. Like, it's a valid idea, but it's not like this... It's not like anything that's being said here
this album
hasn't already been said. And it's it's said in this way where it's trying to make you think that it's the most, like, woke lyricism ever. When
this,
it's like,
this peels back...
Like, no, you can go before Beat Happening. You go back to, like, the late set, like, the Raincoats. They were punks wearing skirts way back in, like, the late 70s, and there's probably maybe even examples before them. It just... And I know all of these bands that I'm name-dropping, and they're just so much better. And I'm comparing this album to them, and maybe that's making me be a little harsh on it. But it just...
I think there's some of the better, like, duo bands out there. Because, like...
I just think...
I think they have potential...
That's my biggest thing. I would love to see this group grow into something I can enjoy, because there's so much I want to like about this album. Every fiber of my being wants to enjoy this album solely on two songs, Bath Bomb and Apricot, and they're barely good. But I just feel so compelled to want to like this album that I'm going to listen to whatever they release next and pray that it's good. But this thing is just so unlikable from the first three tracks. And it just takes forever to find its footing. And when it does, it just peels back the curtain on someone who's not deep and doesn't really even understand what they're doing. It's like a light three.
I'm there with you. I'm giving this a three.
I wanted this to be a four, like, but as we talked about it, this is very much a three.
I'm
sorry,
Chad.
I just want to be honest with you. I don't want to tell you that I like this.
8 out of 10.
Hey, well, we'll talk about that. It's your turn. We really crapped all over this album, so it's your turn to defend
talk
it.
About what you
and
want.
We won't talk. We'll just let you talk.
We're done.
The energy on this thing is killer. Don't at me. There's so much power when she screams those lyrics. I love it. I love the drumming on this work. The dude is killing it. Just each track, like.
The drumming is my favorite part of this album.
I remember you told me the percussion was going to be pretty enjoyable on this album. I didn't think so, but, you know, I was in the minority here, though, because you guys like the drumming.
I thought the drumming was the best part.
Honestly, my biggest problem is that it's too short. I thought this thing was, like...
This is, like, the longest 28 minutes of my life.
I know!
We said we were going to be quiet, but every time I had to listen to this,
And I have a criticism. I think just some of the tracks sound a bit the same. It kind of, like, flows into each other.
God,
it's a little...
Bite Back. I didn't even know... Link in Chat, whatever that song's called. I did not even know it was playing. I thought we were still in Bite Back. I thought it was still trapped.
I love how
like
personal and emotional lyrics are, but also how kind of cynical they are. Very, yeah, I'm feeling this way, but, you know...
This is a very young white girl album.
It really is.
You know, like,
well, it's someone...
I can't say it's not genuine.
It's someone learning... They're just getting their footing. And I think...
I do like that about this album. This is a very awkward...
Like, I respect this band as human beings. I respect the lead vocalist, Alex Luciano, isn't that her name? I respect her as a person. You know, she should keep making the music that she wants to make and writing the lyrics she wants to make. And I don't want any of our criticisms to be misconstrued as, like, that she shouldn't be doing this.
We don't think she's bad. We just think the music she creates is bad.
Yes.
And I
that's
but
a very,
I don't,
very,
being
very
said,
important
know,
distinction.
Who's we? I love this album.
I want, like, I want them to make better. Because I think there are some... that last line on Apricots, yeah, I do agree with the criticism of the delivery, but I think it's, like, one of the only genuine cute moments on the album that kind of succeeds. Or on Bath Bomb.
These guys are so cute!
Which is,
oh,
you know,
when
like,
they perform!
Like,
the Tiger Trap is cuter. Damn it.
This is, I mean, that's the only, like, compliment I can give this thing, because it's cute and I want to like it. Like...
I want to like it. That's true.
That was my biggest feeling. I was talking to my roommate.
Yeah.
And he was like, you sound real genuine when you say it. It's like, because I really wish this was good, man. I 100% wish this was
good.
And
it musically, it falls right into my comfort zone. You know, I like a lot of music that has this DIY kind of lo-fi stuff. But
my biggest thing is...
It didn't feel genuine to
me.
And
the elements of pop-punk that are incorporated, these ooh-oohs and these like, you know what I'm
I
talking
love
about?
Stuff like that. I'm a sucker for that kind of stuff.
It can be good, but it's trite.
Yep.
You guys are too deep.
No,
too deep.
I like I like music like Beat Happening, where they can't even play their instruments and they sing and they just go, I got a crush on you, I got a crush on you.
The I Love Yous are one of my like favorite groups ever, and they have a song called, most of their songs are nonsense, particularly I'm Gonna Have Sex, where Zach Hill just screams. On the chorus, he just shouts, I'm gonna have sex, and then quietly afterwards says, calm down, there's people around. What is that track about? Nothing. Better than everything on here.
Yeah, I just think it's a matter of if you can relate to it, I guess.
I relate to it because I've met people who deal with this
stuff. I insult her for being a young white girl, but I too, I'm Bath Bomb, I was with her. I was a young white girl for a few
months. I have a lot of friends who deal with this kind of stuff on the basis. So,
this album's not about dealing with anything, it's about the way they, in quotes,
deal
with it.
Yeah, it is. The 60s about slutching. Like,
but what does she do on that track that, she just talks about it?
What the hell, Brian? That's what songwriting is.
I mean, that's probably one of my that's probably one of the more enjoyable lyrical moments on the album for me, 16. I just didn't think musically, in the way that her vocals, just the delivery.
Lyrically, I enjoyed
it. Better in concept than execution for me personally. I don't think that any of the issues she's talking about are not valid. It's just the way that she talks about
it. Well, it's when you say, it's not genuine. It's very genuine.
It just seems to me, musically, let's...
I would say this. It's genuine, but it's fake deep. She doesn't understand anything,
I will say maybe it's just because they're learning, they're getting into their
it just musically it doesn't feel
out.
Genuine.
That's true.
Musically,
it's their debut.
It sounds like it was recorded in a garage, but you know it wasn't. That's the vibe that I got this whole time. And it, to me, as someone who adores all this underground 80s and 90s stuff that sounds really similar to this, it just kind of... It feels like a bad parody to me, because you know that there's some 50-year-old producer who was like, "All right, we gotta get the distortion on the guitars because those kids are gonna love it because it sounds like it's been made in their neighborhood."
I want you to look into that and see if it was.
There's another compelling. There's no way to know.
I looked at what record label it was recorded on, and it has a lot of other pop punk bands. It wasn't a big major label, so maybe I'm completely wrong here. Maybe factually I'm totally inaccurate, but it's just the vibe. That I just could not get out of my head.
Good thing about this album, because me and you kind of ranted over when it's two against one, you know what I mean?
But, ass.
The city sucks, it's so big, everyone just walks by each other. It felt like a mirror to me for what I feel about small towns. I'm like, everyone knows each other. Like, I really wish I could just walk through a crowd, no one cares. It's like, I wish I were expendable in a crowd of people sometimes. So I understand this flip feeling of it, of like, I wish anyone talked to anyone in this town. It could hurt
also,
being out of New York.
I cannot relate to partying in New York. I can't. And this album has a lot of partying in New York in it. And to me, it just feels like, man, you're in New York. You're going to college and you're partying. Like, why are you trying to turn this into this big dramatic event?
This is the album I would make if I didn't constantly run into the problem. One, I don't have money to buy the instruments I want. Two, if you've ever sat down and you've tried to lyrically write something to express yourself,
it's difficult.
You'll find how shallow you are when you go to do that, and how little you know, and how unspecial you are. And so it's really hard to, one, find something you even find special to talk about, and two, convert that to where it's going to mean something to anyone. Because most of the time, you're just writing garbled poetry that's going to have, it's this non-meaning, everyone feels this way, what are you doing other than observing? And they, and on top of that, you don't even know how to make music very compellingly. This album feels like that. But they really did go for it, and I really didn't want to like this album. I promise you that, Chaz. But because there are very few small successes on here. I just hope they add up more on future releases.
You guys.
Well, that's a great way to end the show, Chaz.
Yeah, I was kind of sad we were ending with Chaz. I was like, oh, that's rough.
Yeah, I knew, because after he...
So run through again your favorite things about the song. Why do you love the song so much?
I love the song because I know what she's going through. I have friends who deal with this on regular. And it's very personal. Regardless if she's a good songwriter or not, she's pouring her heart out there. And I respect the hell out of that. And the music adds to that. I love the energy. I love how catchy it is. I love just how I want to dance my ass off to this music. 8 out of 10. I really love this album.
3 out of 10.
I'm going to go for 3 also.
You guys are
3. 3 actually. Conceptually. Maybe 6. Conceptually. Theoretically.
That's like...
Theoretical 6.
Jacob, you just stabbed me in the heart.
I know.
Then revived me and then punched me in the face.
I give it a 3, but I was thinking about.
I feel bad because you love John Prine. And
shut up. You like rich sex. Shut the hell up, Brian.
Dude, that Wayne verse is something else.
It's not. That's so true. You're so right, Chaz. You're so right, Brian.
I do. That's like not my least. It's not a favorite, maybe. That might be a favorite.
And you know what? Maybe I should have waited to pick this album because we listened to John Prine, which is one of the greatest songwriters of all
time.
So you guys were spoiled by great lyrics.
This album wasn't heard by anything we listened to.
Shut the hell up. Yes, it was.
I heard this album first, and I waited a week to hear it again.
Oh, God.
Sorry.
Okay, so next week is a themed,
yeah.
Yeah, it is another themed week.
Oh, no.
It's going to be personal. It's going to be the most personal week. It's therapeutic albums.
It's albums that, when we're feeling just down in the dumps or angry, we listen to these albums to feel better. It's our coping mechanism.
That'll change the pick I texted you guys, I think. We're trying to find a little.
I think the way I am going to interpret this theme is it's an album that when I'm down, it's down with me, but by the time it's over, I feel better, you know, marginally. And when I'm up, it just is comforting.
To me, it's more of, it may not make me feel better, but it's good to know that someone is dealing with the same thing I am, and that's why I love it.
For me, I need to find not the similar situation. I kind of moved to find similar anguish. I very much identify, not directly with, I'm not, so I should say, I very much identify with the plight of transgender people in our nation right now. I'm not transgender myself, but and I really identify with their struggle for some reason, really like love what they're doing there. And so my pick ties in with those issues, but the just total war that's going on, this is before 2010, when this topic's being talked about on this album. It's just so harrowing to hear, you know, what they're talking about. They also talk about problems with their record deal, and the last track is more of a feel-good, lift-up, personal track. Kind of feels like it was recorded in like a living room, and I love the process that this EP takes me through. I'm picking Against Me's the Disco Before the Breakdown. It's a 3-track EP. I don't even think it breaks the 15-minute one.
I'm going to be picking Weezer's second album, Pinkerton.
I'm picking the 1992 debut by Red House Painters, Down Colorful Hill.
Here we go.
So that was Unwarranted Music Opinions.
Sorry, Jess.
I lost two friends today.
Podcast is over, guys.
Podcast is done. We'll meet back up, and if we get angry at each other next week, it'll be even more personal.
Yeah,
it'll be
real.
Even more heated.
Oh, I hope you. I'm in your position now. I really hope you guys like this EP. This EP does mean a whole lot.
Thanks for listening to Unwarranted Music Opinions.